Like one day I said to Amy, right, I'm going to go to bed and get up early and do it in the morning. And she said, well, it's only 10 o'clock. I was like, yeah, you're right. She said, just go and do 45 minutes now before bed and then you'll have made a start. Yeah, 1 a.m.
It's bad for me to be doing work that late. What happens is I'm kind of asleep, but I'm really not asleep.
But there's something a little bit rebellious about it, like staying up like a teenager.
Does it remind you of being in college when you hadn't done your essay and you had to stay up really late to get it done?
Welcome to the Art Juice podcast. This is honest, generous, and hopefully humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
And this is episode 76, and we are going to be talking about growing pains. I had a really good alternative title for this, and it was one of those things where you just think, oh, that's a brilliant title and it gives me a totally new angle on it. And I didn't message you at the time I thought of it. And now I can't remember for the life of me what it was. So there is going to be a whole blank gap somewhere in this. Of course, I'm going to remember the minute we stop recording.
Well, if you're listening to this and it has a completely different title, you know why.
That means that my brain started functioning again. Okay, before we get into the main topic, I'm just going to do a little call out again. The British Podcast Awards are open at the moment, and we would love it if you would vote for us. If you enjoy listening to Art Juice every week, if it brightens up your week or your time in the studio, if you can just take 2 seconds to go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote, and then you just search for Art Juice, and you can give us a thumbs up. And we don't know where it will lead to or whether that will be fun or not, but it would be really nice just to see what happens. So thank you very much for doing that. And then what have you been working on this week? I think it's been a busy week for both of us.
Yes, which is why the subject of this episode. So I've been running on the day this goes out, will be Tuesday. I will have just finished or be about to finish running a free, I think it's 8-day workshop online. And last year when I ran this, I had 3,000 people signed up for it. And this year I have 11,700 people signed up at the moment. They keep coming and I'm not advertising anymore. And it's just, I guess, word of mouth or people who were late signing up or whatever. So they just keep adding themselves to the course. And so it's been hugely busy. And I wanted to increase the numbers a lot. But as is always the way with me, I dive in without, I don't let myself, I think about the downside because I want to do the thing. Right. So I just don't even take it in. I just go, well, it'll be fine and I'll manage. And I always do. But sometimes I push myself a bit to the edge of what I'm capable of managing. So this week, so last week for you listening, I spent most of Thursday during the day asleep in bed, and that, unless I have a migraine or really ill, that doesn't happen. Even if I get a cold or something, I'll shuffle around the house still working at a slower pace, but I just couldn't. I said to my husband, I'm going to have a lie down for half an hour because I'm just so tired. Went back to bed at 10 in the morning and woke up at 4 o'clock.
Wow.
I woke up thinking, oh, it's probably time to go have lunch. And I was like, 4 o'clock, oh my God. Ran back downstairs and checked all my emails and everything that had happened on the free course that day. But everyone was fine. They didn't need me. I was fine to be asleep. And I feel so much better today, which is the day after that, just for having had a rest. So I did push it to the edge of what I'm capable of. But it has been amazing fun, and I can talk about that in the main topic about the things I've learned about doing something on such a large scale.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because we talked last week about creative spark and you talked about this boulder that just kind of gathers momentum. And like once it's going, you can't stop it. And I think it's when you're at the early days of anything, all you're thinking about is growth. Like all you're thinking about is trying to get a larger audience or get in touch with more people, or it's always this you know, more thing. And it's totally understandable because it's what we need. We need an audience. We need people to be aware of us. And then it gets us to a certain point and you think, I'm starting to see how this can perhaps have an impact in other ways.
Yeah. Starting to learn. I don't know if you have this feeling. I'm starting to learn, and please don't take this the wrong way, anybody. I'm not saying I'm famous, but I'm starting to understand what it must be like to be a celebrity. Because when you're famous in a tiny little way, in a tiny little community, which we are, you've got a little following of people that know who you are. When you get to a certain point, you start to get requests from people. You start to get people expecting things of you. Would you just look at my paintings? Would you just go to my Instagram and see what you think of it? Would you just read this blog post? And they're people you've never heard from before. And I imagine, so let's say you're Tom Hanks and you're walking down the street. How many people must ask you to read a script? Like, yeah. I've written a script and I wondered if you'd look at it. It must be overwhelming. And so there is a point where you think, this has got to perhaps be, I've got to decide where I want this to be, what level I want this to be at. But that is in no way a complaint, because I've had so much fun. And I just think, I know for me, I have to push things to a certain point and then decide.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be happy holding it back.
Yeah.
And be more controlled about it, because then I'd always think, well, what could I have done more? And I love the fact that there's so many people taking this free course. I'm really coming out of it. I've had really moving emails, like from a lady whose husband died 2 years ago, and she hasn't been able to paint since then. And now she's painting again. And she said, my daughter said, it's so lovely to see you like this, Mum. I haven't seen you like this for so long. Things like that, you think, that's what it's all about. So maybe if I hadn't reached 11,000 people, I wouldn't have reached that lady. Yeah. And, you know, so I'd love to be able to get it to even more people, but without killing myself.
Yeah. And that's the difficult thing, isn't it? Is that most of certainly me, you know, you start things with no idea really of where it's going. Like, we had no idea where this podcast was going to reach or who it was going to reach. And it's amazing. And I love the fact that we're still, you know, I'm still turning up after a dog walk. We're having a joke about how tired we are. And, it's still just us turning up and chatting. You know, it's, in that sense, it's no big deal. But I think it does bring things that can get to the point where it's overwhelming. I mean, I love helping people out, but I had an email actually a couple of weeks ago that you reminded me I haven't even replied to. And it started off, hi, I'm a student, I love your work, I'm doing a project on X, could you just help me out by answering these questions? And I opened the email and there were 26 questions. And I was like, Jesus, that's going to take me about 3 hours to write. No. Yeah. And I kept meaning to go back to her and say, look, I can't write all of this down for you. If you want to set up a Zoom call or something to record, and then you can do with it what you want, that's fine. But I'm afraid it's not my priority, because it can't be, because if I spent all my day answering those kind of questions, that's all I would do.
Yeah, I know. So what have you been doing? Those questions. So
well, I have been very badly preparing for my virtual open studios, which in my membership I say to people, and this is what I used to do, start planning and promote it, you know, 3 weeks in advance, create a Facebook event, make sure you have the event on your website in advance, start talking about it, tease people with some of the things you're ready. I've done all of mine about 36 hours in advance. So very, very, very late to the party, just simply because I've been working on things for other people. I'm afraid I've got two paintings that haven't even made it into frames, so they're not part of it. But getting everything prepared for that, getting everything uploaded, subscribers had early preview access, so there's a hidden page on the website that they only got via email. And then over the weekend, everything obviously is public and open, and by the time you hear this, that part of it will have happened. So I've got a certain amount of free to everybody available drop-in live streams. I'm trying to work out which is the best way of doing the tech. It's fun. It's really quite fun. And there will be follow-up. And the interesting thing about this, talking about growing pains, is that this event, this Open Studio event, was the first time I ever exhibited a group of my work together at home, 10 years ago now, 11 years ago now. And so, and it, I just love the local feel of it, but it's an upheaval every year. Like, my husband likes it because he says the house gets cleaned properly. You have to clean all the personal junk away, hang everything up. People come into your house for 3 days. It's a lot, you know, it's a lot to do. And then, of course, we've started with art fairs. But long term, I've always wanted to move away a little bit from that huge, massive physical concentration of getting work together and trying to do it a little bit more virtually, because I think people are more comfortable now. If you can give them enough information with showing things online. So yesterday I had a message from somebody about a painting. She wasn't sure. I did a video for her via Instagram, sent it to her on DM. And this morning she said, yes, lovely, I'll have it. That kind of the ability to do that, just without the pressure, I said, just sleep on it overnight. You'll know how you feel about it in the morning. But long term, I've wanted not to move away from art fairs in totality, because I love them. There is nothing like getting your work up all together and meeting people. And when they come back, I will still be doing them. But the fact that there is now this opportunity, and we have been pushed into this, like, let's not make any bones about it, been totally pushed into this situation. But the fact that everybody is in it, like somebody who bought something yesterday, I had a message from him saying, I am so bored of being working at home. Like, I just want to do anything, just buy something, because I'm just bored of it. I can't wait to get out again. And, you know, I will invite him, somebody who wants to come to the studio and pick things up. And it's just, it's interesting how this growing pain idea, we just move through these stages of one thing to another, and along the way you learn, and there are things that are difficult about every single stage, but yeah, you just got to keep moving through it. But that's a very, very long-winded way of what I've been working on this week. I've been doing all the images, all the updates, website. I have a little system now. Again, this is like not what I would have had a million years ago, but this is a kind of checklist for uploading new images to the website. Like, have I copied the original file? Have I edited the high-res version, saved a web version, saved a detail, saved a framed image, added it to the product, tick, 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 tick. And that's the only way I can do it, because otherwise it's such an overwhelming job. If I don't give myself the mini rewards of having a tick for every stage of it, yeah. I could just lose track. Lose track, and it's just too much. But
I do wonder, I think that these Open Studio events in future, I'm sure they'll come back to normal where people come and visit you again. But I do think there will probably always be a virtual element now, because I think we're going to find out that everybody sells more online than they did in person. Mm. Because, well, provided, I should say, not everybody, provided you have a mailing list and a following of some size, you know, a reasonable size, and you've built that side of things up, then when you do virtual Open Studios, you can reach somebody at the other side of the country or the other side of the world, which you can't do when they can just come. So I could see these. I know we're discussing it for next year with North Yorkshire, that we'll go back to normal provided we're able to, we'll also have an online element to it. And I really like the way yours was done. Ours was done differently with videos, and the videos were really good, and a surprising number of artists did the videos, and then they were edited all by the same person, so they had a consistent look and feel, and they went out at different times on the Facebook page. But there wasn't one consistent, we didn't have a website person able to make one consistent page for everyone. And a lot of the artists don't know how to make their own web page. So there wasn't that side to it in quite the same consistent way. I liked what was done on yours.
On our Artists at Home one?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so on our Artists at Home one, they've got everything, or they had everything hidden behind a screen. So it was, but in previous years, you've been able to browse in advance through the artists and have a look.
Yeah.
So this year, what they've done is they put a kind of hidden screen up that said, this will all be revealed at 6 o'clock on Friday. Sign in to get early access. And
that's a good idea.
I don't know what we do. I don't know what they do with the actual email addresses, though. There is no mailing list as far as I'm aware. So
have a mailing list. So we could do something like that and it would be the reason to sign up.
We could have a mailing list. But the issue, again, with all of these things is there somebody who is volunteering their time to coordinate it all? Because it takes a lot. Takes a lot to do. I think it's just interesting how everybody is being pushed into situations that they have to develop a little bit where they are, and for everybody it's a little bit of a gulp moment, like, oh, how is this going to work? I don't know. What's your option? You either don't do it or you have a go and you try it and see.
Yeah.
So this leads us then into our main topic, growing pains, which is basically what happens when you have a go at new things and you get things wrong. Is that it?
Yeah, basically. Or you get things wrong, or like you say, you get frightened. You get that feeling of like, oh, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And I notice it with the people taking my free course. So some of the people stretched and feel uncomfortable. I hate this phrase, actually, but they lean into it. I don't know another way to say it. They go, this is uncomfortable, but also it's fun and I'm going to learn. But a lot of us faced with that fear or something new actually want to run away. Some people do run away, but I'm very proud of the people who said, I feel like running away, but I'm not going to. Mm. But it's like that sense of, no, I don't want this. It's not comfortable. I want to go back to what I know. So I'm watching it happen with the people taking the course. But of course, I'm experiencing it myself as well, because I'm experiencing, right, this is 4 times the size of anything I've ever done. And I've got all sorts of things wrong because I didn't know. I've got all sorts of things right. And that's what I keep reminding myself. Got all sorts of things right. Most people are having a fantastic time. Most people are learning a lot of stuff. It's a very positive atmosphere. We've got 7,500 people in the Facebook group, and it's 99.99% positive and supportive and fun. So that's an amazing achievement. However, organization-wise, it's not been brilliant. And one of the things I wrote down to talk about today was how we get confronted when we go into new things with, we can learn what our best strengths are and we can learn where we're weak. And often it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the flip side of the same coin. So I know that I'm very, very strong in building community, and I'm very, very strong in teaching, but I'm weak in detail. And I'm weak in organization. And one example of this is, so I have a sales page for my full course and I set it all up, and it's two different pages. And I thought it was perfect. And I sent it to my VA, Jamie, to go through and to check. And she sent me back a massive list of things that were wrong and said, do you want me to correct them all or do you want to do it? And it was like broken links. I said the wrong date in my video. Just little things that I hadn't even noticed, but she did because she's good at that. So I'm realizing, you know, I fixed a couple of very basic issues by day 4 of the free course, and the problems went away because I'd fixed that issue. One stupid example is I didn't, every time I sent a lesson out, include links to what had gone before. So every time I sent a lesson out, people would write and say, I missed lesson 2, or I didn't get lesson 3, or could you just send me lesson 1? By just putting all the links there, I removed 95% of those emails.
Yeah.
Lesson for next time, and all sorts of other lessons.
But do you think if somebody had given you, here's how you write an email, this is what you should include, would you have followed that? Or would you have still gone, well, I'm kind of want to do it my way, and then you learn as you go. You see, I think we just, your way of doing it, yes, it meant that you had a day that you were overwhelmed with emails, but you're never gonna make that mistake again, because that lesson is so firmly ingrained now. You're like, oh, okay, I really need to do that. And you understand the reason why. It's not just that you're doing something because somebody's told you to do it or because it's best practice. You've really learned why. It's not just that it's a step that's good to take. It's just that you now understand in a whole different way what it's like for somebody who's taking your course to not have that information represented in an easy way for them every day.
Yeah.
And we tend to do things from our point of view outwards and not think of them from the point of view of the person receiving it. And yeah. I think that that is something that you really do only learn a little bit by doing it. And I made a mistake yesterday. I included a message me for inquiries, and I didn't put .com on the end of the email address on the button. So when you clicked it,
nobody could message you,
you know. So, and I thought I'd checked every link on the page, you know. So yeah. I think things always go through the, always slip through the net, and it's really useful if you've got somebody else to give it a second glance if they're a detail person and you're not. But it's more that you understand the process from both ends when you actually do it, and I'm not sure that there is really a replacement for that.
No, I think I don't think there is. I think that's it with any kind of growing, isn't it? You've got to go through the mistakes.
Yeah.
And what I'm learning is when they happen, you've got to deal with them totally authentically as yourself. So I made a big mistake. Well, I didn't even actually make the mistake. It was a technology glitch, but something happened and an email went out early. And it passed me like 10 years ago. I would have thought, right, I must deal with this and make myself appear really professional. And perhaps I would have tried to cover up that it was even a mistake. Perhaps I would have tried to come up with some way of making it seem like it was part of what was supposed to happen. I don't know what I would have done, but I would have tried to be really professional. Now me just thought, I was freaking out. My internet went out after the mistake happened, so I couldn't communicate with anyone for half an hour. When it came back on, I thought, I'm just going to do a live stream into my group and explain what happened and say I'm sorry, because that's what I would do. And I was nearly crying at the beginning of it because I was so emotional. And I think that actually worked really well. People want you to cheer up in that situation. So they're like, no, don't worry. It's fine. It's fine. That video is now being viewed something like 7,000 times. So I've reached almost everyone who was doing the course with that video, and they know I was sorry. And the whole conversation became a really good chat with lots of questions. And I just felt so much better after it. Whereas if I tried to be professional, go and put loads of makeup on and do my hair and then sit there and try and look like, you know, I'm in charge, don't worry, that wouldn't have gone as well.
No, it doesn't. It's hard work as well doing it, like, because my point is that there are always going to be mistakes. And I think the thing is, it's not just when you're in inverted commas small and learning that this happens. This is always going to keep happening. Like, it won't be this next year, but next year when you do it, there'll be something else that goes wrong. Because there will be, like, when I was part of the CVP team, the first day that their videos went out, there was an issue with the hosting, and people weren't being able, the videos were, or they weren't going back to the hosting link. And because they have so many people watching, it was going to back to multiple different sites, and some of them were fixed and some of them weren't fixed. And we were trying to deal with that with all of these inquiries. And they said, okay, this link will work. Copy and paste this link into the Facebook comments. So I was copying and pasting the link into the Facebook comments, and then Facebook picks up that you're copying the same link, and it bans you because it thinks you're spamming people with an outward link. So there we were on workshop open day, and I couldn't get into their Facebook account to do what I was supposed to be doing. Who knew that that was going to have happened? Like, and that's on a big scale. Like you say, by day two, it's all resolved and everything's okay. But in that moment, you've got everyone going, what do we do? How do we manage this? And I don't know, it's a hiccup on that day, but it's just something that happens. You just got to keep going through it. What helps though, having other people involved to say, uh-oh, this has happened, talk me off a cliff?
Yes. That helped. That did help. I actually messaged you because I was desperate to get in touch with my helpers. Well, here's a lesson I've learned. If you have people helping you, get their email, get their phone numbers so that in an emergency you can contact them when you can't email or text them or message them, because I had to get in touch with you to get in touch with someone I know is in your group so that then I could. So yeah, have that helps. But also I think what helped me was the level of experience of what you're saying, that things go wrong. Last year, what went wrong was that I was about to launch my sales on a live stream and Zoom wouldn't connect to Facebook, and I couldn't, everyone was waiting for me on Facebook, but I couldn't get on, and I'd given a Zoom link out and people were on Zoom. So I ended up making my presentation only on Zoom and all the Facebook people couldn't see me. And a few other things went wrong at the same time. So I was all flustered. So having had that experience this time, I was able to calm myself fairly quickly. I had a little bit of a blip and then I was able to think, right, what am I going to do? Because I can't, you know, I can't freak out about it. It's not going to do any good. But I was wondering, so we're talking about this in the sense of launching things and your open studios and my, and it might be someone's newsletter that goes wrong.
Yeah, sending an email with the wrong link or sending an email, anything like that.
I got one from an artist. An artist was launching their artist support pledge and they emailed and sent out, you know, big launch email, and I was keen to look at what she had, and when I clicked the link it didn't work and she had put the wrong link in. And so it happens to all of us. But how does this work in our work, in our artwork? This is what I was thinking about. So I'm okay pushing through and growing and doing new, bigger things in business and then coping and managing. But do I push myself as much in my painting, and should I? So going back to when we talked to Brian a few weeks ago and he said, stand in a circle and go round and round and round, just get better and better incrementally. That's not that you're not going to have growing pains if you do that, because you're going to be comfortably growing a little bit each time, aren't you? And I started thinking this morning, I haven't told you I was even thinking this, so I'm throwing this at you just as a curveball, but is it the right way to go in small circles and just incrementally get better? Is it an area where we shouldn't be having massive growing pains?
Well, I'm a big advocate of taking small steps, but I think every so often you do have to take a big giant leap. And I think that applies in both things. And there are things that you do learn, like when it's a really important link on an email, send yourself a test copy, check all the links. I don't do that every time, but when it's a really important one, that's what I do. But I think there's a difference between, we're talking about anything that's the marketing or the launch side of it, there are other people involved. So you've got a responsibility, you've got a commitment that you said you've got to live up to. And that's my self trick for that, is that I tell people in advance that I'm going to do it, and then I have to do it no matter what happens, because you've got that other people who are expecting things from you. When it's you in your studio working, you don't have that. And that's why it's harder, because it's you living up to yourself. And it's a much harder situation to push yourself in. Or, and this is the thing, even know what it is that you're wanting to extend into, because that's the whole point, is that you don't necessarily know what you're working towards at that point, because it doesn't exist yet. And I think that's why it's much, much harder in the studio on your own work. But I think if you're not experiencing any growing pains with your work, you're not doing the work.
Yeah, I agree with that. I found this, I read this book years ago by Seth Godin called The Dip, and I found a little quote from it, because this book is exactly, so what this book is about is, he says, and this applies to art, marketing, or anything, every new project or career or relationship starts out exciting and fun. Then it gets harder and less fun. until it hits a low point, really hard, really not fun. At this point, you are in the dip, which will either get better if you keep pushing, or you are in a cul-de-sac, which will never get better no matter how hard you try. The hard part is knowing the difference and acting on it. We fail when we get distracted by tasks. We don't have the guts to quit. So, and I, if you think about this in relationships, so you're in a relationship, it starts off lovely, you're in love, everything's fantastic. Then you start finding out that they're not as great as you thought they were. Then you think, well, I'm just going to keep going because I'm in it now and we've been going out for a few years. I'm going back now in time. But, and then you just keep trying to make it work. But actually, you'd be much better off just going, you know what? It was fun at the beginning, but this is not for me. And I think he has such a great point that when it comes to, so in our paintings and in our art businesses, sometimes we have to go, I thought this was for me. Now I've tried it. It's not for me. And I'm going to do something else instead.
Yeah.
And knowing, but we feel like we should never give up. We feel like, well, I should keep trying with this. So let's say I've got an idea to push my paintings to a larger scale. And I try and try and try and I just can't do it. Am I in the dip where I just need to keep going a little bit more and I'll get there? Or am I actually in a cul-de-sac and I should be making 12-inch paintings and no bigger because that's really my thing? That's really hard to know the difference.
It is really hard to know the difference. I'm not sure that I quite agree with his wording about keep pushing, or neither do I agree with a cul-de-sac, which will never get better no matter how hard you try. I actually don't believe that. I believe that we can get to a certain stage with a project where we stop trying and then you end up in a cul-de-sac. But I think if there's something that you're working on and you're working on it or working through it, I actually don't think it will never get better. I just don't believe that.
See, I got an actual evidence that why I do believe it. So our other business that I run with Phil, we've had that business for 17 years now. We got it to a certain point in sales and revenue, and we never got it past that point. We got it to the point where it paid our bills and we managed. We never were able to get it anywhere past that. And all sorts of different reasons came up over the years. We got dropped by Google at one point, more competition came in, all sorts of different reasons. But looking back on it now, I can see that we could never have made that work because it was not a passion for either of us.
That's a different thing, though. That's a different thing because you're in a situation where it's not that you're no longer trying with it. It's just that you're not on the stage of still developing it.
No, so I think it's, but I think it's that we got in a cul-de-sac. We were pushing because we thought we were in a dip. For quite a few years, we thought we were in a dip. And if we just keep going, we'll start coming out the other side. But we'd gone down a cul-de-sac because it wasn't what we should have been doing. And if we'd have given up on it years before, if I'd have started doing what I'm doing now years before, and of course you can't say that because you couldn't have because circumstances were different. But with what I'm doing now, I feel like if I went into a dip, I would know it's a dip and I'll keep going and I'll come out the other side.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? So it's, we go down wrong tracks in our life. Now,
Yes. I agree with that. And I don't agree that just because you've started something, you should always finish and it's the right thing for you. There are definitely things that you start and you think, uh-oh, no, this isn't right. Reroute, redo it. But I don't think that if there's something that you're still in and you're still interested in innovating and looking for new things, I don't think things can never change or never get better.
No, and that's what he's saying. So then you're in the dip. So you're in the dip. So you know how the dip is like the ugly part of the painting?
Yeah.
It started out great. It got worse and worse and worse. And then some people give up at that point. They go, you know, it's just getting worse. I've overdone it. That's what people say. I've overworked it. I've ruined what I had. But you know that, no, that's just the ugly stage. If I keep going, I'm going to start coming out the other side and I'm going to have something much better than the thing I liked at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other side of it. Some people give up in the dip when actually they're only in the dip and you just keep going. And that maybe that's the key, what you said, between knowing when it's a dip and when it's a cul-de-sac is, do I have passion and interest in it still? In that business, we didn't have, and we kept trying to make it work, even though neither of us really wanted, that's not what we wanted to do, but we couldn't see another option. So we just kept going and we never got out of the dip because it wasn't a dip, it was a cul-de-sac.
Yeah, there's definitely something in that. I mean, you have to want it.
Yeah.
Like this week, getting everything ready, there have been, you know, there have been times where I, or even Paul said to me, you know, this is just, this takes so long to do, doesn't it? It's like, yeah, but what else am I going to do? Like, there is, quitting is, it's like quitting is not an option.
Yes.
So we're just going to do it anyway. I think if you've got too many options, or it's not quite that your back is against the wall, but if there's an easy option and something that's hard to do, most of us choose the easy thing. And making art isn't always easy and it isn't always fun. And certainly promoting it isn't always easy. It can be a lot of fun, but it's, you don't always get those immediate results from it. But if it's important to you and you know that it's something that you want to keep developing in the long term, you just keep doing it. You just keep thinking of new ways to do it and new ways to make it fun. And I think that's the thing about this. Yes, everything hits a low point. Most things that are hard, that feel like you have to push, have an end point to them. Like, things that I've been working on computer wise and like editing about 50 billion image files, I don't have to do that day in, day out. I know that when I get to the bottom of my list for this number of paintings, I'm done on that. If I had to do that every day for the next 6 months, then it would be exhausting and really not fun.
Yeah.
But I know I have to do that for this group of things and then I'll be on to something else. And that's the bit that makes making art and the promoting of art fun, because like no task lasts forever apart from keep showing up and doing the paintings. And even within that, there is huge variety and huge possibility and huge options every single time we go back to the studio. I seriously can't think of anything else that operates like that.
Yeah.
And of course, there are things where we have to do parts of it that we don't like. Hello, it's called life. It's called having a job. You know, it happens, doesn't it? Of course it does. It happens at home. Like, oh, who loves cleaning the loo? You know, not probably top of my list of things, but happens. We do it. I don't know. I'm just interested in this. We fail when we get distracted by tasks we don't have the guts to quit. I'm not sure that people stick at things because they don't have the guts to quit it. I think people just stop doing them because they're not interested.
That was us. So we didn't have the guts to say, you know what? We do not want to run a business writing resumes.
Yeah.
But that required huge courage to give that up, because we didn't have another source of income, because we did it together. So if one of you's got another job, you've got a bit more leeway to give something up, but we didn't have that. Yeah. So it would have taken more courage than we had. And I remember thinking that at various points, even before I read this book, thinking, what would I do if I could do anything? Well, it wouldn't be this. And at the time I was about 40 and I thought, you know, I'm 40 and I'm trudging through life doing something I don't enjoy. But I genuinely couldn't see. I knew I didn't want to go back and work for someone else, that I couldn't face, like going to a job and being told what to do. So the only thing I knew how to do for myself was what we were doing. And I thought, well, I'll just have to keep doing this then. It's better than the alternative. So I think that's what he's saying there is, I mean, this is a one paragraph summary of a little book, which is makes a lot more sense when you read the whole book. But he's talking about when you start something and it's just not for you. but yeah. you just think, I don't want to do the alternative is too scary. So I'm just going to stick with. Now, that doesn't really apply in our painting so much. Although I have seen it with some of the people on my course, I must admit, I've got some people taking the free course who were professional illustrators, for example, or fabric designers, and they're burnt out and they don't want to do that anymore. But the alternative to quit that and try and develop their own work is a really scary prospect. And I had somebody last year who's now one of my case studies, Amanda. Hi, Amanda Pickles. She's amazing. She was making commissions and making a good money making these commissions that she wasn't enjoying. And she'd become well known for them in her area and people ordered them for wedding presents and all sorts. And she just didn't want to do it anymore. And she's had the courage to give herself a year to completely make her own work. Mm. And her work has just really blossomed and it's so beautiful what she's doing. That was real courage, which I didn't have, you know, so I stayed in my cul-de-sac for too long.
So is the growing pain issue here that if you're not careful, if you don't keep checking back in on what you're doing and course correcting, I guess, that you can end up in a cul-de-sac that's the wrong place for you to be? Is that the growing pain issue?
I think
things can get taken away. You can carry on down a route and it can grow and look like it's going well. And then you think, uh-oh.
Yeah, I think it's the growing pain issue for me is that point when you're either in the dip or you're in the cul-de-sac. So to go back to paintings, when we start a series, it's fun. We're splashing paint around. It's loose. It's exciting. Then it starts getting a big muddy mess. Then we've got 12 messy paintings all lined up and we don't know what to do with any of them. And we know from experience now that's a dip and we're going to keep coming out of it.
Yep.
If you've got less experience, you might think, you know what, this is just not for me. And that would be the wrong thing to give up on.
Yep.
Because we know you can come out of that. But there might be other areas of your life where they're not growing pains. It's not the dip. It's actually real pains. It's like, no, this isn't for you. Yeah.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's the opposite of a cul-de-sac is the opposite of growing pains.
Yeah.
You know, a dip is part of it. It's part of the growing pains. And I wonder if there's something in here that is time scale related too. So, you know, often what happens in a painting is that you get to that, what's that phrase about, you know, the darkest part of the night is just before the dawn. And that's what it is. And you do have to have the confidence to keep going. But we're talking about a fairly short time scale. Whereas when you're talking about going a business for years without it working, or a relationship years without it working, that really is in a cul-de-sac. That's over a really long period of time. So I just wonder if there's a thing about the timing of it that helps you know the difference. And to that point, you know, back to my list of boring tasks, if you can give yourself maybe a little bit of a end point, so whether it's, okay, I've got all of these things to do that are a result of my business growing, that's not the funnest thing in the world, but I know that there's going to be an end result to it. If you're with your work and you want to give yourself something, you just say, fine, well, I'm just going to give these till the end of this week. And if I'm not happy with them with the end of the week, I'll put those to bed and I'll start on something else. And that will give me new momentum, because I think that is the route out of this, no matter what it is to check back in with yourself and say, well, okay, if I'm in a dip, what is making me feel like this about whatever it is that I'm doing? Is it that it's not what I want to be doing, but there's an end point to it? Or what do I need to get back to a place where I feel excited and motivated and happy again? And how can you get back to that? And that's the way out. And if you're in that state permanently of feeling bleh about it, that's what you've got to act on.
The another example I have, actually a less dramatic example of being in the dip and then coming out, was when I was working with watercolors when I first started painting. I did that because I thought they were easier. I thought they'd be easier than acrylics, and also because I was scared of acrylics for some reason. So I worked in watercolor. It wasn't for me, and I did realistic type landscapes. Wasn't for me. And I did that for maybe a year and a half. It wasn't till I took a workshop in York for a one-day workshop that was acrylics, and I had so much fun that it opened my eyes to the fact that these are not for me, that this is more for me, this thing over here. And so I was in a cul-de-sac with watercolors, whereas someone else, watercolors would be perfect for them, and they're just in a dip and they just need to keep going. For me, I was in a cul-de-sac. I didn't have the courage to get out of it for a while because I thought I couldn't do acrylics. But this is something in my head just told me, you're not going to be able to manage that. So that's I think that's not, that wasn't a time, maybe that was a time thing. Maybe if I'd said to myself, you know, you've been at this for 3-4 months and you're still not happy, maybe you should try something else. But sometimes in that situation, I didn't have enough knowledge perhaps to know what other options were available to me. Yeah. Also, it wasn't just lack of courage. It was lack of knowing what else to do. It was only when I went to a workshop and someone opened my eyes to other possibilities that it.
Yeah.
So maybe part of it, when you feel like you're in a dip or a cul-de-sac and you don't know the difference, maybe part of it is some kind of external stimulus.
Yes. Yeah.
To see if there's another thing you should be doing.
Yeah, definitely. So growing pains then, probably what we're saying is actually you want them.
Yes.
Not something that you should shy away from. I think, you know, in your business, it's going to happen. And in your work, you actually, you want it a bit because you know that it means that you're making progress. But if it's all feeling so gloomy and down, and it's not actually helping you move towards anything that you want, whether it's moving through a short-term period or extending your work in some way, then it's time to shake things up and have a little bit of a change. Okay, so what's inspired this week? I'm just going to throw in, because it just seems a little bit appropriate here. My little thing this week is the idea of just-in-time learning, which I love. So I was listening to something on the radio this week about how the food production, all the food production and the deliveries, that's done on a just-in-time basis. So that's why we had shortages at the beginning of COVID, because everybody was stockpiling, and it's literally day in, day out, and gets the supply happening. But the same applies to learning. So we can prepare and learn everything in advance that we might possibly need to know about a topic. But in that time that we're learning, we're not actually doing anything about it. Whereas I still do just-in-time learning, which is I don't need to worry so much about that until I actually need to know about it. So I'll give you two examples of this. So one is a piece of recording software called ScreenFlow, which I first heard about 3 years ago. It's a whole $129, which was far too expensive for me to pay for something when I could use a combination of free stuff and iMovie for editing and QuickTime, which have been fine. And then because I actually needed to record content on my mobile phone simultaneously, I thought, right, I'm going to bite the bullet and do this ScreenFlow thing. And it's really good fun and it's really easy. And I like it a lot better. But it was really needing that extra part that prompts me into, okay, fine, I've got to get my head around a whole new video editing technology. But now is the time that I need to do this. And also, just as another mini thing, it's bothered me for a while on my website that when you go to the pages of the actual painting for sale, the images are quite small. And then the text part of the page is quite big. And I thought I really needed to get into complicated coding and change that. Now, I might be remembering it wrong, because I think I've looked for this before and thought, oh, I can't do that. Anyway, this time I thought, I just wonder if there's a way I can change that. And guess what? You Google, and 5 minutes later, it's a question of copying one little bit of text into one really easy place on my website, and it changed so easily. And this has been on my to-do list for about 3 years. And I'm like, why did I not do that earlier? Whether it makes any difference or not, I don't know. But it did kind of made me laugh that some of the things that we think we put off because they're going to be a big deal. When you really need to do it, you just get on with it, don't you?
And I think that's what's happening in the art world at the moment, isn't it? Watching all of these people are suddenly having to learn things they didn't have to learn when they had galleries and art fairs and exhibitions, and they're learning, and it's brilliant.
I think it's really exciting. I think there's a lot going on. Almost too much to go on to keep on top of. But I know.
I'm getting nervous with all these people who are starting to do Facebook advertising. I'm like, hey, go away. I was the only one doing Facebook advertising. My prices are going to start going up. But really, it is exciting to see everybody start to do this stuff.
It is. Yeah. Lots and lots of opportunities. Right. What about yours this week then?
Well, mine is quite a funny, in a way, a funny one. It came out of the free course. One of the things I love about doing anything like this free course or writing blog posts or doing videos is in the comments, you learn so much.
Yeah.
You get ideas for what's needed. So, but years ago, we went to a talk by an author called Stuart McConey, who also has a radio show. Mm-hmm. And he'd written a book about traveling around the north of England. And he was telling a story to illustrate how British people are. He said that he'd gone into this little town in the Yorkshire Dales somewhere, and a big sign on the door of this shop in capital letters said, "We do not sell light bulbs or batteries, so don't ask." And he said it made him laugh so much because in America, the shop owner would go, "Oh, we must get some light bulbs and batteries in. That's what people want." But in Britain, people go, "No, we don't sell light bulbs or batteries, and stop pestering us for them." So why I'm telling you that story is I kept being asked this week in the free course, "Could you just show us how you do your paintings? Could you just show us what you do?" And I always avoid that, not because I'm precious about any, I don't have any techniques of mine that other people don't already know. I have nothing special, so I'm not precious or worried, but I always avoid it because I don't want mine to be a paint like me course.
Yeah.
But then I thought, look, you keep getting asked about this. So it's like the light bulbs and batteries. Why are you keep saying no to people? So I'm making my full 10-week Find Your Joy course is up for sale. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, it's up for sale this evening. It goes on sale. It goes up for sale on the evening UK time of June 23rd, and it's for sale until June 29th. And last year, what I did was I filmed myself working, and I shared that every week as part of the course. I just shared video of me developing a series of paintings. This year, I'm making that whole series available to anyone who takes the course. But instead of doing the exact same thing again this year where I just film what I'm working on, I'm actually going to film what I'm working on, but with a view to showing the techniques. So this is how I start a painting. This is how I do the next layer. This is how I sand back. This is how I glaze to get certain colors. This is how I mix colors, etc. So that if you take the course at the same time as developing your own style and following the assignments that I set to release any kind of tension and lack of looseness and really have fun and explore your own voice, you're going to get access to all of these different techniques and things that hopefully will spark ideas for you as well. So I'm not saying I'm not selling light bulbs and batteries. I'm ordering some light bulbs.
You're going to sell light bulbs and batteries. It's really funny because when I saw that in the notes, I had a totally different interpretation of it.
What did you think it was?
I read it as we don't sell light bulbs or batteries, because I've been having a discussion with somebody this morning about the Facebook shop setup. And most things like that online, they're designed to be selling multiples. So basically they're designed to be selling t-shirts or light bulbs or batteries. Like, here's a thing, there's 100 of them in stock, you know, it's worth doing because you can just get as many multiple repeat orders of the same product as you want. So I read it as, we don't sell light bulbs or batteries. What we sell in original paintings is something that is a unique, one-off, individual, one of a kind, only one exists in the world, and therefore the promotion and the selling flow of it is totally different. And so therefore doing a Facebook page shop setup for every single individual one-off painting, for me, just isn't worth it, because that they're designed for multiple flows of purchases of the same product. What we sell isn't like that. It's more special than that.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different way of talking about it. So that's how I read it. Isn't that interesting?
You bring up a really good, to go back to growing pains very briefly, when you set up WooCommerce,
yeah,
it thinks that you're selling multiples unless you tell it.
Yeah.
And the way I set it up initially, I misunderstood how to tell it there was only one. I did the wrong thing. So somebody bought the same painting twice, and I had to write and say, I'm so sorry, but someone else has already bought that. That was embarrassing. So yes, another growing pain.
Yeah. But those kind of things, right back to where we are, you wouldn't have, was it the end of the world? Somebody was disappointed.
No, they took a different one. They bought a different one anyway.
You wouldn't have known that until you've made the mistake. So yeah, I just think you'd coming out of this to end on, I hope that both of us have reassured you that you still make mistakes. That's how we learn, is growing pains. As we get bigger, you get new challenges in front of you, and you're just going to learn best where you just keep trying it, keep moving, and making those mistakes. Is I'm afraid it's not going to go away, is it?
It's not. And you know how I know it's not going to go away? Because I said my course is open between that day and that day, and I didn't tell anybody where to go to find it. So if you go to my website at louisefletcherart.com, it will be on the homepage after the evening of June the 23rd.
So there we go. We're getting better.
Not there yet.
So you know what you're getting if you sign up for Louise's course now. You're getting her.
In all my glory.
Right, we will leave you there this week. Very happy painting, everybody. I did some of your Find My Joy exercises. I had really good fun. I did mini squares. Actually, I started off with bigger squares and then I did mini ones and really enjoyed it. And the people have been like, oh, can we buy these? And I'm like, no, they're for me and my sketchbook. Oh. But it's a really nice way of working, and it actually made me think quite differently about the big paintings that I want to get on with next.
Oh, cool.
So it was really good fun, and it was really nice to be told what to do for once.
I know, that is nice when you take a course, isn't it?
Yeah, really nice. Yeah. Really nice. So yeah, head on over to Louise's website and take a look and see if that is for you. And we will see you again next week. Thank you very much for listening, and have a very happy week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been up there for a long time. It says, do you need privacy, discretion, top level service, the finest view in the house? Do you want style, space? Do you want beauty and a sense of place? What that's about. I don't know. I think it was just a nice little thing that I put up that I thought that's the kind of impression and attitude and feel, that idea of service and beauty and sense of place and that kind of feel.
What I've got above me on my notice board actually is a certificate of achievement awarded to Riley for being dog of the day at daycare. He was a good doggy.
That's a bit like the thing that we had on our fridge that Amy got, that was a certificate from her school. She went on a school skiing trip. Anyway, she got the Muppet of the Day award for skiing into the line of people and knocking everybody over.